The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Started because I'm guessing you guys have classes you need to get to. Like I said to some of you at the beginning, this is really informal, so please feel free to ask questions as we go through everything. I'm going to pick up a packet. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Amy Kaloran. I'm the Judicial Clerkship Coordinator here. I recognize a lot of faces, met with a lot of you for various job application stuff or judicial internships or that sort of thing over the past couple of years. But here we're here today to talk about judicial clerkships, the nuts and bolts of applying. This year we've kind of broken up a lot of the clerkship planning and information. So that, you know, we had one session about what exactly a law clerk does. If you want kind of the information from that, feel free to just stop by our office and you can pick up a handout. I did include information for the why clerk or how it can help your career, since that had to get postponed from last week because of the weather. And we will have next week, weather permitting, session about application strategies that work for various 3Ls or alumni for this past year, which was the hardest year we've seen in a really long time in how to apply for judicial clerkships. Generally speaking, today we're going to go through how applying for clerkships differs from kind of how you've applied for other jobs probably in the past. We're going to talk about how to research different judges and that sort of thing. And, of course, we're going to talk about exactly how to apply, including every piece of the application that you'll need to send. So with that said, and like I said, jump in with questions at any time. Generally speaking, the timeline for applying to clerkships is a little bit different than applying for other jobs. You've probably either gone through OCI or government hiring or your own self-directed job searches. And in those, you get a bunch of offers and you compare them, and it might be kind of a slow-moving process. A lot of what happens with judicial clerkships is judges see who they want and they snatch them up. And some of that stems from what we call the golden rule of clerkships, which is you're expected to accept the first clerkship that you're offered with a judge. This isn't a WCL rule. It's not a me rule. It's every law school kind of across the country tells their students this. So judges basically are not used to being told no. So when you get offered a clerkship, there really only is one answer. At that point, when you accept the clerkship, you'll withdraw the rest of your applications. So you're not going to have the option to kind of go through, look at everything that comes in, and then decide. That said, you do want to make sure then that you only apply to judges that you would be willing to accept an offer with, which leads us into kind of how to research, how to look for clerkships, everything like that. Unlike some positions that you may have applied for, a lot of clerkship positions are not necessarily advertised. So we do our best within OCPD to get a lot of information out there to you, but you are going to end up doing some research and some, you know, calling or looking on different websites or everything on your own. In your packets, pages 5 to 6, there's information about how to research different courts or different judges, different clerkships. One of the big things, especially for federal clerkships, that you might have heard about throughout the years is something called OSCR. You might have heard about, you know, 3Ls talking about it, complaining about it, whatever. OSCR is the online system for clerkship application and review. It's used by about 50% now of federal judges. All federal judges, except for a few exceptions like the U.S. Tax Court that are part of a different system, are listed in OSCR. So all of the judges are listed, but there might not be any information about those judges in OSCR. Later on this spring, are you all 2Ls here? Anyone not a 2L?
Yeah.
Okay. You can get onto OSCR now with your current graduation date. For the rest of you, you're going to have to wait until later this spring, until they probably will let you on. That's fine, because the new version of OSCR has not come out yet. Oscar, they come out with a new version every spring. They haven't even told us what the release date will be yet. The reason we're holding this information session so early is that some state judges are taking applications and hiring now. But that said, when the new version of Oscar comes out, you'll be in finals. I won't bother you about it then, but I will videotape a webcast on exactly how to use Oscar to apply for clerkships that you'll be able to watch kind of at your leisure over the summer. Oscar is one of the places to research federal judges and their hiring criteria. Like I mentioned, about 50% of judges use it. Some judges don't post their clerkship information there. And so you'll also have to just look at, you know, other resources to find out about federal judges. The Judicial Yellow Book is something that you might have referred to in the past when looking for judicial internships, or you might have used one of the other, you know, the government yellow book or anything like that. That's where you'll identify all of the other federal judges. One thing to look for there is the whether a judge has career law clerks, in which case they're probably not hiring because they'll have the same clerk stay on for years and years. But if you don't see hiring information about a particular judge in Oscar or elsewhere, you can assume that judges in the Judicial Yellow Book, federal judges in the Judicial Yellow Book, will be hiring, and you can assume that they'll probably be hiring in the fall of your 3L year. CareerLink will also have some additional information about applying to federal courts in addition to state courts. One thing I want to clear up that I get a lot of questions about: there are two different places in CareerLink where you think you might be able to get some information about clerkships. There's a clerkships tab when you log into CareerLink. That's basically just an address database. It does not mean a judge is hiring. It does not mean they're accepting applications. It does not mean they want to receive any applications. So don't go by what you see in the clerkships database, because there's not necessarily any information there that you can use. The jobs and resume collection section of CareerLink is where you're going to find information about specific judicial clerkships, which judges are hiring, and you'll find all of their hiring criteria that we can glean from them. Now, this is both for federal judges, although if a judge is listed in Oscar, we generally will not provide you with the information, but you will see information for some judges who do not hire the law clerk hiring, do not follow the law clerk hiring plan, which I'll talk about in a minute in terms of timeline. You'll see some information specifically about those federal judges in the jobs and resume section of CareerLink. Also, some federal courts have really good websites talking about their hiring criteria. Most don't. Did you have a question? Okay. Another often overlooked resource is different administrative law judges. So I've listed these under kind of the federal court clerkships, so on page 5. But administrative law judges will hire in different ways. Some judges hire through the DOJ or other agency honors programs, so you'll have to follow their specific guidelines for when to apply and everything and how to apply. Others do not have their own administrative law judges in the actual agency. They have floating judges. They don't generally hire law clerks. And still others will hire through things like USA Jobs. So those are probably the most difficult to find. But if you'll kind of read the packet, that provides you with a little bit of information about that. How to research state court clerkships. A lot of the same resources apply. The jobs and resume section of CareerLink is going to be a great starting point for you. OCPD does call a number of judges in not only the D.C. area, but across the country. Normally, we focus on the appellate courts because there are quite simply too many judges to call all of them. But for local courts and that sort of thing, we do also call trial courts. So that is one specific place to find information. A lot of those postings will be done over the summer, but there are some now because some courts, like the Maryland Court of Appeals, are hiring now. And so those, if you go into the jobs and resume section of CareerLink, you'll find information specifically about what to send and everything now. Another great resource is the Judicial Yellow Book, which I mentioned for federal judges. The Judicial Yellow Book also contains information about all state appellate judges, but not the trial courts. Again, this is biographical information, not specifically how to apply or anything like that. Some state court websites will have a lot of information about how to apply. Some will have almost none. Another great place to look in order to find about, you know, the structure of the court systems and information about specifically the trial courts in different states is the BNA directory of state and federal courts. You can access this, plus the Judicial Yellow Book, OSCAR, and all of these other things if you go to the judicial section of the OCPD website. There's kind of on the right-hand side, there's a toolbar. So the BNA directory will provide you with, you know, different charts of exactly how the state courts are structured and everything like that. In addition, you can always call chambers to ask about their hiring needs, or you can apply directly in the fall or the summer before your 3L year or the fall of your 3L year. When you call chambers, be sure that you specify which year you're looking for, so specifically the 2011 clerkships, because some chambers are still in the process of hiring for 2010. Most have already hired, but they'll probably think you're calling about that anyway. And finally, a good general resource is the Vermont Guide to State Court Clerkships. Again, you can access that in the right-hand side, the links on the judicial section of the OCPD website. There's a lot of good general information, but not a lot of very specific information. So if you look at that and you see that you've missed a deadline, check again, because you might not have missed it. That one is password protected. Currently, and this is all written in your thing, the username is covered and the password is Bridge. It's always something Vermont-based. That'll change sometime this summer, and we'll email you with the information with the new password and username for that. Questions about different resources you can use to research state court clerkships and judges or federal?
Mm-hmm. They're a little off from that. You mentioned not to send applications unless judges are actually seeking applications. It sounded like I inferred that from something you said. Is that in fact the case? And so should you call if you see a date that has passed or if you don't see any date at all before sending something?
That is generally the best way. WCL doesn't kind of bundle applications, so you're going to be mailing off big packets of everything on your own. So quite simply, to save yourself a few bucks in mailing costs, calling is a good idea. Also, some judges only want, you know, specific information. They might only want, you know, a list of references rather than letters of recommendation or something like that. Some judges also have career law clerks. And so that's another thing to kind of keep in mind. Because if they do have career law clerks, they're not really looking. Generally, if you'll flip back to page 13 and beyond, there's a lot of information about timing of when to apply. Because what you brought up, Sam, will kind of lead into this federal court hiring is a little bit unique in that the federal judges all get together and decide a specific date when they're going to accept applications from rising 3Ls. They've not set the date yet for this coming season. So I've listed the 2009 dates in here just so you can get a general idea. It's always shortly after Labor Day, but it sometimes, you know, varies a little bit. So if you can kind of get a general idea from here, where this is important is, technically, judges do not accept applications before whatever that first date is. And this is federal judges only, by the way. So this past year, September 8th was the first date that judges could receive applications from applicants. For judges who follow that plan, some of them take it very seriously. And so if you send something early, they may not look at it at all. In fact, there are some judges who have written angry letters to the dean because they've gotten too many applications early from students. So you want to make sure that you're sending things at the right time. That said, judges are judges, and there's nothing you can really do to enforce things for them, and so not all judges follow this. And so you also don't want to apply after a judge has finished accepting applications. There are some circuits where both the circuit court judges and the federal district court judges are notorious for accepting applications early, and sometimes have finished accepting by the September 8th or whatever date is. The 10th and 11th come to mind. Sometimes some judges in the 4th at the circuit court level, not in the district court level, and other judges take applications over the summer. As a law school, we cannot encourage you to apply before the September 8th or whatever date. I trust you all to use your best judgment and make sure that you apply when judges are actually accepting applications. Clear? Or so really what you brought up, Sam, in terms of not applying if a judge isn't accepting applications, it's not only for your benefit, but you do want to make sure that the timing is right in applying, especially to judges, federal judges, who adhere to the timing guidelines versus those who don't. State court, there is no overarching anything governing it. And so if you flip to page 14, you'll see a few pages of just various states and the D.C., of course, and their general timing or where you'll find this information. You'll see that some states have centralized processes where you just have to send a resume, maybe a cover letter, maybe a writing sample in to one address, only one copy of everything, and it gets distributed to all of the judges or justices. Other states, you have to apply individually. Some states, like New Jersey, give you a choice. New Jersey, as an example, you can send in a general cover letter and a resume, and it will get put in this nice book that's distributed to judges throughout the state, both at their Supreme Court and all of their intermediate appellate courts, all of their trial courts, everything like that. Now, specifically with the New Jersey Supreme Court, if you're very interested in them, I recommend also applying individually to each justice, because that is where I've seen people have the most success. Generally, at the trial court level, I've seen people have success both ways. But if you have someone specific that you want to target, always target them individually.
So for ones where there is a centralized hiring process,
yes,
you can go outside of that in addition? Or how does, because mm-hmm. to specify a cover letter to one individual judge, when
right.
you go to the court and you're really interested in them and you share that, if it's centralized, how does that
You can send one outside, but I would also send one through that system, unless it's something where we say, you know, centralized or apply. So, like, under New Jersey on page 16, I think it is, it's listed, you know, centralized process or apply individually. But, for example, Connecticut Supreme Court, you're just sending in one general application, and that's kind of how it's done. If you wanted to send a specific letter, if there was a particular reason you were targeting a specific judge on, say, the Connecticut Supreme Court, I would go ahead and do that, but also submit through that process. Whereas New Jersey, if you really wanted to only target one specific Supreme Court justice there, you could only apply to that justice and not go through their centralized process as well. Does that make sense? Okay. Other states, like Alaska and Arizona, have a centralized deadline, but you apply individually to each justice. And other states, there's nothing centralized. It's all, every single judge does whatever he or she wants. Those are the ones that we usually try and call, and we'll post in the jobs and resume section of CareerLink. There are a few judges, or courts, rather, generally, who will do OCI. So make sure that you keep an eye on all of the OCI information that you get over the summer, because you don't want to miss those deadlines. Some of them, like the Connecticut Superior Court, they only want applications through OCI from WCL students, because since they come to our campus, they don't want to receive them any other way. Fairfax County is another one that their circuit court will come on campus, and so you want to make sure you make that deadline for when they come on campus. Others, for example, the fourth division of the fourth department of the appellate division of the New York Supreme Court does collect, or I'm sorry, the third department collected through fall recruitment. They did a resume collection, but you can also apply outside of that. Questions on kind of the weird different state court timing and everything like that? If a state is not listed, I would start with the Vermont directory or with their state court website, usually their Supreme Court website. But also, if it's something that you're interested in, feel free to shoot me an email, too. A lot of the states that we call, and obviously we call the local ones, but a lot of the ones we call are just based on where people have interest. And so if a lot of people are interested, it's easier for us to do one big call and get out the information rather than have every individual student calling. Okay? Other questions? Okay. Some states have really early deadlines. I know I mentioned Maryland, the Maryland Court of Appeals, also the Maryland Court of Special Appeals, which is their intermediate court, will be taking applications this spring as well. Oregon also has an early deadline. Their deadline is in mid-April. Those are the ones that have an absolute deadline that it's very early. The Virginia Supreme Court also starts taking applications that early. There are a lot more state courts that also have deadlines over the summer, but those I wouldn't worry as much yet at this point. Any other questions about that, or should we go into the actual parts of the packet? Okay. So to apply, you're probably not going to send anything all that different from what you've sent to other jobs. If you turn to page 8, everything's generally listed. Unless otherwise specified, either on CareerLink, in OSCAR, in any other place where it's listed. So if it's specified otherwise, always do what the judge says. But unless it's otherwise specified, you're going to send the same general materials, cover letter and resume, a writing sample, a transcript, and 2 or 3 letters of recommendation. The cover letter, there's a general anatomy on the next page, page 9 of your packet, of how to do a cover letter. It's really probably not different. If you know how to write a good cover letter for other jobs, you know how to write a good cover letter to a judge. What you want to focus on is partly why you want the clerkship. Certainly, if you're applying in California and you grew up in California, you want to highlight that. So why you're looking for the clerkship. Also specifically why you're looking for an appellate clerkship or a trial court clerkship or that sort of thing. But also, you really want to focus on why they should hire you instead of all the other law students applying for the job. There are some great examples. If you go down to OCPD, we don't have this online for, I guess, privacy reasons, but we do have a lot of old letters from people who've been successful in getting clerkships. Obviously, it's not just the letter that got them the clerkship, but there are some great examples, especially of how to phrase things that you might not have thought of. So feel free to just go down anytime to the resources library in OCPD and look at the binder. It's on, there's one shelf that says judicial on it, and it's kind of sticking out there, called Cover Letters That Worked. Also, make sure you tailor cover letters to some extent. Now, if you're applying to 200 judges, you're not going to write 200 different cover letters. And by the way, the number of judges you apply to is entirely up to you. Some people apply to 10 and get a clerkship, and some people apply to 200 and don't. There are so many factors that really you want to discuss it individually, either with me or with your professors or with someone, and make sure that you're going for the broadest number or the broadest, you know, region that you'd be okay in accepting a clerkship. But you don't want to, you know, apply to every single judge in the whole country, because that's just a waste of your time. Now, what you do want to do is, even if you are sending off 200 different letters, you want to tailor to some extent. So you want to make sure that, like I mentioned, the California thing. You talk about, you know, your ties to a region. talk about the specific courts or the specific level of court and why you're applying there. If you're applying to federal courts and you're applying to some of the specialty courts, especially in D.C., like the tax court, the Court of Appeals for Armed Forces, Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, that sort of thing, why you're looking at that court, that you're not just applying because it's in D.C., even if that's the real reason, what you have to offer that kind of goes beyond just, hey, I'm a law student in D.C. and I'm looking here. I am happy to review cover letters. Generally, I ask that you meet with me at least once before I will go over those for you. And one thing that you want to make sure of with your cover letter, with your resume, with everything else, is that it's absolutely perfect, that there are no errors. Especially now in this economy, which I know you're sick of hearing about, I'm sick of talking about, judges, and a lot of times it's their law clerks who will screen the applications too, are looking for any reason to reject someone. If you spell the judge's name wrong on the envelope, they're not going to open the envelope. And I clerked for a judge whose last name was spelled in a variety of different ways. And I can tell you there were some that just never got opened because they weren't spelled right on the envelope. If there are mistakes in your cover letter, it's not going to come across. The other question I get a lot about cover letters is some schools tell you, you know, I am a third year, to write something like, I'm a third year law student at American University, Washington College of Law, I'm on this journal, I'm in this percentage of the class, and this is what I've enclosed. For a minority of judges, that it actually is the case. But please talk to me before you send out anything like that, because for a majority of judges, they actually will look at the cover letter. Or if they don't look at the cover letter, it doesn't hurt to send a longer one to them. There is a minority of judges, specifically if you're looking at Supreme Court feeder judges, who are looking for a letter more like that. But the majority of judges, your cover letter is a writing sample. Questions about cover letters? Resume, it's going to be pretty much the same as other resumes. One thing you do want to do is keep it to a page, except for very, very extreme circumstances. I haven't seen a resume that can't be cut down to a page for clerkships specifically. You do want to make sure it's totally up to date, so include whatever you're doing this summer. Even if you're applying to the Maryland Court of Appeals right now, if you have your summer job lined up, stick it on there. Generally, the rule is you can include something a semester ahead of time. So if you know you're going to be in a clinic, or you know you're going to have an editorial position on a journal or a brief or something like that, you can include that on your resume as well. So you can kind of go about a semester ahead of time in what you include. The other thing that is a little bit different for clerkships rather than some other positions is generally you'll want to include something like interests or hobbies. When I say interests or hobbies, I don't mean, you know, I really like IP law. I mean something about you as a person. I've seen things that most you might think for any other job would be silly, like New York Giants fan, or the example I always give is the judge I clerked for. There was a guy who applied for a clerkship with my judge when I was clerking there. In his interests kind of section, he's put that during winter and summer breaks, when he wasn't, you know, working at other positions and wasn't in school, he worked at his family's barbecue restaurant. My judge happened to love barbecue. And so, guess who got called in for the interview? Yeah, I mean, the guy was qualified and everything, but so were other applicants. He came in. They talked for over an hour about barbecue. I am so glad I was not in there on that conversation, because it seriously would have bored me to tears. But he and the judge really, really hit it off talking about barbecue. And lo and behold, he got the clerkship. Not saying to put barbecue on there. But I am saying, if there's something that you're passionate about, if there's something unique about you, judges are looking not only for someone who can do the work, but also for someone they can sit and have a cup of coffee with. They're looking for someone they like and have something, either have something in common with, or someone who's just an interesting person. So if there's something that you have, put it on there. If it's something really risque and weird, at least ask me first. But but you do kind of want to include hobbies. But the more specific, the better. You probably heard us talk in the 1L, you know, resume cover letter workshops about that. The more specific you can put, the better. Don't put traveling, but if you've backpacked across I met with someone today who backpacked across New Zealand and Asia. That's interesting, and that's better than just putting travel as a hobby. So the more specific, the better. Feel free to ask me questions about like any of those to your kind of personal level if you're not sure whether you should put it. And if you don't have anything interesting, and frankly, I probably didn't have anything interesting when I applied, you can leave it off, especially if you've had really interesting jobs. Like, you know, there are people who have worked on a sheep shearing farm. And that's just something that's interesting and different and will catch someone's eye and they'll get asked about. And that can kind of serve as your interesting thing that sets you apart. Questions about resumes? You all know how to write a resume at this point. Transcript. Get at least a couple copies of your official transcript from the registrar's office and get a copy of your unofficial transcript. For Oscar applications, so for about half of the federal judges that you might apply to, you're actually not going to use any transcript. You're going to have to sit and type in a grade sheet, which is really annoying but required. So you'll do that based on your unofficial transcript. Most judges will only be looking for a copy of your unofficial transcript, and so you can just photocopy your unofficial one and send it to them. Every once in a while, a judge will specify either in Oscar, if they take paper applications and put information in there, or through, you know, kind of what they tell us and what we put into CareerLink or something, that they want an official transcript, so make sure you send it. And the other thing is you'll want a copy of your official transcript to take with you to any interviews. At this point, unless you're applying for judges who have deadlines, you know, wait to get your, who have deadlines before then, wait to get your copy of your transcript till after you get your spring semester grades. So quite a ways away at this point. Obviously for Maryland Court of Appeals, for the Oregon Supreme Court, and that sort of thing, you want to get the copy now, and you can always write later an update if you want to. If you transferred from another law school, you'll need to get copies from your other law school as well. Questions about transcripts? Okay. Writing sample. There's not really a set number of pages. A general rule of thumb is 10 to 15 pages, although if you're looking at state trial courts especially, they don't want to read anything over 10 pages. They're too busy. And so 7 to 10 pages or so is good. You do want to use something up to date in terms of what you send as your writing sample. So if all you have is something from first year rhetoric, make sure you at least sit down and fully update it. Writing samples are the one thing, bless you, that our office doesn't review. So you will have to meet with someone from rhetoric to do that. A lot of times they'll try and get you to meet with the Dean's Fellows first if you're not comfortable with that for whatever reason, because they're generally your peers or you. Then you'll, you know, just want to insist on making an appointment with a professor. Usually if you have a relationship with one of the professors, that's an easier way to go about it. But especially if you're not doing any of this until over the summer, they will review things over the summer, even though they're on Dean's Fellows working, but they can't do it at last minute. So you really want to check with them ahead of time to make an appointment for that. And I think if you just go to their front desk, you can make an appointment. Writing samples in terms of kind of what to send. A lot of people want to send their comment from their journal or whatever. A lot of times that's not really the best option. For some judges, generally federal appellate judges, that could be a good option as long as it's a version that has been edited by no one but yourself. I don't mean looking for typos or that sort of thing, but I do mean like content-wise. So if it's gone through the publication process, it's not a good writing sample. A lot of times if you have something either from a class or if you have something even better that's more practical, a brief you've written for a moot court or for a class or for an employer, a memo you wrote for an employer, that sort of thing is probably the best writing sample for most judges. Occasionally, by the way, judges will want two writing samples. So in that case, you can kind of choose a couple of different things. You'll want to include a cover sheet on your writing sample explaining the context and everything, especially because when you're looking at a 10-page thing, you don't have a 10-page brief. You have like a 20-page brief. So you're going to take an excerpt of that. So you want to take a cover sheet and explain that it's an excerpt. If it's something you wrote for an employer, explain that you're using it with permission. Make sure you have the permission, of course, of your employer. Explain if it's been edited by anyone else other than yourself. Generally, like I said, you want to use something that's unedited. If you've made any redactions, changed names, etc., if it's something from an employer, put that in. If it's something you wrote on moot court in a team, make sure you're only including the portions you wrote, or if you have to, for it to make sense, include other portions. You know, tell exactly what those are, a brief statement of the facts, if you didn't include that, anything to put it into context you're going to want to use. There are examples on the OCPD website, not in the judicial section, just the general thing about writing samples, but do you have, or about both writing samples, and there's a sample cover sheet. Do you have any questions about writing samples? Quiet group. Okay. Letters of recommendation. Generally speaking, you're going to have to provide two or three letters of recommendation. Sometimes you'll get away with just a list of references, but usually judges will want specific letters. The ideal mix is going to be two professors from WCL and one legal employer. The letters should be addressed to individual judges. And so there are a couple of things in here, especially if you turn to pages 10 and 11, that talks specifically about how you're going to get that done. For WCL professors, there's a whole process that you go through. It's really not that hard as long as you actually follow the steps. But if you don't follow the steps, they'll get sent back to you, and they won't. Your letters won't get processed. So what you want to do is there's a URL in here of a sample Excel spreadsheet. Download the Excel spreadsheet, save it as your own, and change the names, because that is the process that the faculty assistants want you to use. So what you'll do is you'll put in every single judge, their names, make sure everything is accurate because it reflects not only on you but also on the school, the professors, everything like that if there's a mistake. Put in all of that information for every judge you want to apply to. Now, at this point, if you're applying to, say, the Maryland Court of Appeals, you're not going to know every single judge everywhere else that you want to apply to. So you're probably going to end up going through this process a couple of times. But you don't want to do, you know, you don't want to bother your professors and their faculty assistants over and over again. So, you know, do the one this spring, do another one over the summer for your fall applications, that sort of thing. What ideally will happen is you'll submit this Excel spreadsheet, your professors or their faculty assistants will get you the signed letters of recommendation, all printed off, sealed in envelopes, that you will then include in your applications, and you'll send the whole packet together. That's the ideal. Sometimes there are delays, sometimes on the professor side, that sort of thing. If it's going to make you miss a deadline, send everything except for the letters of recommendation and mention in your cover letter that separate letters will follow from Professor so-and-so, and so on. Because you don't, you know, it's better to get everything except that out than it is to send everything together and have it get there too late. A lot of judges do hire on a ruling basis, so the sooner you get your things in, the better. For non-professors, there are all sorts of different ways that it'll happen. And by the way, for professors, ideally, you do want to ask them sometime this semester before the summer. Different professors will have different deadlines, and different professors will have different, you know, guidelines in terms of whether they will write one for you. So some professors will not write them unless you get an A in their class. Some professors will only write for one student. Some professors will only send off, you know, X number of letters. The smallest number I've heard is 10. The largest number I've heard in terms of limit is 100. It really varies, and it's entirely up to them. For non-professors, for, you know, employers that you've worked with, internships, externships, summer associate positions, whatever, there's a little bit more flexibility, and there are different things that, depending on the employer, of how things are done. Obviously, if it's someone that you're working for this summer, you can't ask them yet. So wait until you've started and worked there a sufficient amount of time. In terms of personalizing letters, there's a little bit more leeway. If you're working at a big firm, if it's a big firm partner or whatever who's sending off the letters, you do want to get them the letters personalized to each judge. If it's a government organization or a smaller firm or a nonprofit, they simply don't have the resources. Sometimes an employer will have you do the mail merge for them, and that's absolutely fine. Ideally, you do want to get them either to physically sign each letter or to do an electronic signature. The best is obviously a real signature, because that's going to be taken most seriously by the judge. Sometimes an employer will give you a general letter that just says, "Dear Judge," and that's photocopied. It's not the best, but it will do. It really is up to you and your employer or former employer or whatever to kind of work out how you want it to be done. Also, occasionally, an employer will ask you to write the letter. This is something I get a lot of questions about because it's really awkward. I can provide you with kind of general guidance. I'm happy to also take a look at it before you give it to your employer if you want, because I know that it's uncomfortable. But just general advice about this is, think about what you want to say about yourself, and then try and provide specific concrete examples. And that way, it doesn't sound like you're bragging or anything like that. It sounds like you're saying, you know, so-and-so can meet tight deadlines. We gave him this project, and he turned it around in 24 hours. You know, a specific example is a lot more comfortable way of explaining all that. All of these things are for paper letters of recommendation. So are there any questions about paper letters of recommendation before I move on to Oscar? Yes?
Is there, like, a preferred employer if you work at, like, four different places? Is it your most recent, or...?
Usually whoever can speak best about your work ethic, your research skills, your analysis skills, your writing skills, the things that you'll need as a law clerk is going to be best. So if you really got to know one employer a lot better than the others, that's probably who's going to write you the best letter of recommendation. And the same actually goes for professors, too. You know, adjunct professors are fine. Writing instructors are fine. Go for people who know you best, who can really say a lot more about you than, oh, she got an A in my class. You know, who can talk about, like, especially if you're a research assistant, by the way, for a professor. Those are excellent people to get as your recommenders. Does that kind of answer it? I mean, a lot of you have had multiple jobs, so really you've got to look at your own kind of situation. Yeah?
For the states that have centralized processes, how should those be addressed?
Usually, some of them just don't even ask for letters of recommendation, so that's really easy. For the ones that do, they'll either specifically tell you, like, a person's name, or you'll do it to, like, the chief judge or chief justice, or it'll just be, like, a general dear judge. Okay? Oscar, letters of recommendation, is an entirely different process. It's actually a lot easier for your recommenders, but there are more steps that you have to take. So what you need to do with Oscar is, and everything will be explained in the webcast that goes out to you this summer, what you need to do with Oscar is, you'll sit down, you'll select every single judge to whom you are applying. You will then go through and create an application for each judge. It doesn't have to be a final application, you can change everything, but you need to select your recommenders for each judge by August 18th. If you have it done by that date, I promise you that your letters, as long as I get them from your professors at time, will be ready to go. If you don't have it done by that date, I will do the best I can, but I can't make a promise. And that's because, honestly, I'm the one who processes these thousands, and so I set an early deadline. Obviously, if a judge adds a position later or whatever, that's an exception. And I also will not penalize you for your professors getting things in late. But I do need you to take your steps by August 18th. And by the way, the August 18th is generally the deadline to get everything to the faculty assistants as well, because as you know, it's the back-to-school time too, and so they're really busy with that stuff. So they need some turnaround time, and if it's an adjunct professor, they'll need an additional week, so it's around August 11th. Rhetoric also has its own guidelines, by the way, and that's outlined in the packet. Questions about this? Okay. One thing that people are often hesitant to ask for, but that makes the absolute biggest difference, is if someone is willing to make a phone call on your behalf to a judge. Generally, people will only do it if they know a judge, but some are willing to do it even if they don't know a judge, and that still can be a huge help. Judges at this point are receiving anywhere from 100 to over 1,000 applications for one spot. They quite simply don't have time to look at them all. And so whatever you can do that sets you apart, especially having a recommender, a professor, or an employer call on your behalf, makes a huge difference. Also, if there's anything you can do, like talk with alumni who have clerked, is another kind of great way to get set apart. And if an alumni will contact the judge for you, or if you can even just talk intelligibly about a clerkship for that judge or whatever. One great way to find this, there is the alumni survey database that alumni who have clerked will often fill out a survey about their clerkship experience. Usually they'll leave their contact information. It's a great way to kind of find out more about a judge, contact the alumni, find out whether it's someone you want to apply to. Keep in mind, no one's going to say anything bad in those surveys, but they'll say mediocre stuff and you'll kind of know. If it's lukewarm, you can kind of tell whether it was a good experience or not. In terms of applying, if you're flexible, that really helps in terms of getting a clerkship. Clerkships are only a year or sometimes 2 years. So if you are willing to look in locations other than where you want to ultimately practice, that will help you a lot, especially if it's somewhere where you have ties, like your hometown. And please feel free to make counseling appointments with me to go over kind of your individual application strategies, your individual documents. I do mock interviews also for clerkship interviews. And one thing you'll want to make sure you do is sign up for the judicial listserv, which is where I will send out all sorts of information about upcoming deadlines, specific like new clerkships that are added late or whatever. Also, when there are things like, you know, the federal law clerk hiring plan sets their new deadlines, or when there's the Oscar webcast or whatever, that all goes out over the listserv. Any other questions? Well, thank you, everyone. Please feel free to take pizza.
Do you know offhand, does the DMV participate in Oscar?
The DMV?
D.C., Maryland, Virginia.
Oh.
They do Oscar?
The federal judges? Yes, most of them do. Now, one thing to keep in mind, especially with D.C. and sometimes in Maryland, the judges prefer people with experience and will only hire people who have worked for a year or two after law school. So there are some judges like that, but not all.